This is Here Now the News. I'm Jerry Barmash, and this is 2021. We made it after a trying 12 months with no equal for this generation. But as bad as it was for Americans, overall the year was even worse for the black community. So my first episode of the new year is with Bishop Wayne T. Jackson, founder of the Impact Network based in Detroit. It's the largest privately owned African-American inspirational TV network in the world. He has plenty to discuss, from the disparity of COVID cases to anxiety about taking the vaccine. But 2020 also shined the light once again on racial injustice after the brutal killing of George Floyd by Minneapolis cops. The year culminated with a presidential election and the overwhelming support of blacks for Joe Biden, which proved to be pivotal in changing the political landscape. My interview with Bishop Jackson was done in early December.
Thank you, Jerry. It's a pleasure being here with you.
Well, I mean, we have quite a bit to speak about. First off, I want to bring up the fact that you interviewed President Trump before the election 4 years ago. And here we are, this election, we are actually recording this 1 month to the day after the 2020 election. A lot to bring up, a lot to talk about. But I want to just touch on the interview 4 years ago that you did with the president and how that factors into now with President-elect Joe Biden winning big, especially with the black voters. Was there a change that you saw with Trump and the black electorate this time around?
Well, in 2016, when candidate Trump was running for the presidency, he asked the Impact Network, which is the largest African-American Christian television network in over 90 million homes. He had asked that if we would interview him concerning what he wanted to do for the African-American community. And certainly at that time, Jerry, we had a lot of African-American ministers who didn't want to be involved with anything with candidate Trump at that time. But I felt that it was necessary to be able to get the message out and let the people decide. I believe that you should have free speech and at the individual say what he needs to say, and then let the people make the decision. I believe in that. So he made some commitments to the African-American community and felt like that you got to give everybody a chance. And now, you know, the 4 years that have proven what it was all about. I mean, people scored his card, his graded him on this past election. And you can see that there was a heavy turnout of African Americans who really tipped the scale in favor of President-elect Biden and Kamala Harris winning.
There are several factors. What is the main reason for that?
Well, the diversity. If you really look at the way the cabinet was put together, and you really look at the way that we have seen when it comes to the issues concerning our community. You talk about a lot of things, and politicians, they do have a lot to say, but when it comes to really fulfilling their promises, many times the African-American community doesn't see it. And then when you look at his cabinet and those that he had representing our country, they were not looking like African-Americans or brown people, Hispanic, it wasn't that representation there that we felt, or the policy that were there that we felt that it was representing our community. So the people were very frustrated. They were frustrated with some of the things that had happened down through the years with some of the things in Charlottesville. We can go all the way back to a lot of things, but it was definitely a motivator to get people out to the polls. And that's the thing that caused, the election to tip over and side with President-elect Biden.
Did he fail the black voters?
Well, I'm the president and the founder of the Impact Television Network, and I'm a pastor also. So when you talk about things being, and we know politicians are not our savior, but yet there must be some representation there that will at least allow us to move forward. And so when you said fail the community, when as a pastor, we're giving out in the so-called heyday in the economic boom. And when you look around in the stock market and Wall Street, people are doing real well. But as being a pastor, we have been seeing the neighborhoods continue to crumble, crime rates are going up. Also, you know, we're giving food baskets out, hundreds of baskets out a week. And, you know, it didn't trickle down. That's what I'm trying to say. So when you say fail, I haven't seen a significant difference when it comes to what the African-American community is looking for.
I want to ask you, I touched on, obviously, this is a month since Election Day as we record this. Trump continues, even earlier today, continues to hold on to these, as I'm sure you've heard about the fraud claims. Virtually no evidence, and many are starting to pull away, most recently his attorney general. If you could speak to the president right now, what would you say?
Well, first of all, we know every court house they went into to try to present their case, every judge tore it down. Even in Pennsylvania, a federal judge that he had put in place himself said that this, you know, this claim of voter fraud is so messed up. It's almost like putting together Frankenstein. And when you look at the evidence that's being presented in the courts of law, they work by evidence. It's not me assuming or wanting something to happen. It's the evidence that really needs to speak for itself. And so when you look at what he's doing, it's really hurting and dividing the nation even more because you have people who are loyal to him. Over 70 something million people voted for him. And so these people are faithful to President Trump. But in the same sense, we are a democratic country, and this democratic country of democracy must move forward. No one is a leader forever. Everybody knows that they have to move out the way for the next voice of the people. So I would say to him, to answer your question, is that without any evidence, even your own attorney general, who you told to go out and investigate some of these alleged incidents of tampering with the voting machines and also ballots that were millions of ballots now being destroyed and manipulated. It's don't even make common sense. But I would, you know, my suggestion would be that we need to move on with our country. Our country needs to heal. Certainly the African-American community, which I'm very concerned about. I'm concerned about all Americans, all people. But when it comes to the African-American community, I see the disenfranchised. I see the hurt and pain that so many of the African-Americans are going through. And we need to move forward and we need to start healing.
Did you worry that as the weeks were approaching toward the election and Trump was out on rallies, and he would say many times not to trust the mail-in votes, it could be fraudulent. And obviously that's a big reason why those mail-in votes were predominantly Democratic, even in counties that Trump would win big numbers on election night. Did you worry that this was setting the tone for what would be in these weeks to follow?
Well, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to see, you know, what was going on with that. It's like a tightrope walker. Some of them have nets below them. So if they fall, they can, you know, have a safety net. And the reason I say that is because if the election wasn't favorable to him, at least he could say and cry fraud. But going back to that, there is no evidence. And yes, I was concerned about it. But one thing about America is resilient. America stands by the grace of God. And I felt like that whatever that is being tried, whatever is being so-called trying to condition a person's minds or people's mind or a group of people's mind, that, you know, when you got evidence, you can't call something black white or white black, or you can't look at a peach tree and call it an apple tree. You got to see it for what it is. And I really believe that when it's all said and done, that when the truth comes out, that it will begin to loosing the minds of people who are believing in this ridiculous fabrication of of voter fraud.
Part of the voter fraud claims by the president, he had said about wanting to throw out large numbers of results from big cities. I'm sure you know about this. Atlanta, Philadelphia, Milwaukee, and a city that you know very well, Detroit. They were big numbers, margins of victory for the president-elect Biden, but also they have in common, they are all majority populations with African-American voters. And how do you react to that?
Well, we, you know, as an African-American and a Detroiter, we were insulted by that because, as you just named, Pennsylvania, Milwaukee, Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia, Detroit, when you look at Philly, when you look at all of those cities, they are very highly concentrated with African-Americans. So to call Detroit a fraud, to call Philly crooks and things like that. So who are you talking about? You know, you're talking about the people that live in Detroit, those that live in Philly and so forth and so on. But what, and that's been, that was very offensive because it was thrown off on individuals that you're saying they're not going to vote. And, but it was the reason that you had the big voter turnout is because people were tired of the same thing. I noticed for a fact, you had African-Americans and brown people who were just tired and is saying, I will stand in the line for 9 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours, just to get my vote across. People were not going to allow their vote not to be heard. So when you look at those areas that really tip the scale, the African-American community and Mr. Biden, President-elect Biden and Harris, Senator Harris, they understand that it was the black community and they understand that it was a people who were tired of the past 4 years and they wanted to move into a new direction. And that direction is a direction of healing.
Were those racist tactics by the president?
Well, you know, I don't want to call anyone a racist, but I do. I can say this in 2016. I asked him in my interview, you know, are you a racist? Because before he even took office or he was elected as president, those kind of rumors were floating about and floating around all over the country. I asked him that. Only he knows if he's a racist or not. When I was around him, there was no indication, should I say, the way that he reacted around African Americans. But I can say this, that you only, you know, our master teacher, Jesus said that you will know a tree by the fruit it bears. So the fruit that was born these past 4 years, if you look at it, you can see the neo-Nazis and others that were doing this whole anti-Jewish, anti-African-American, the racial tension that's in our country. I believe it starts from the head all the way down. So you have to look at a person's actions to really tell what they are and who they are.
We're at a crossroads moment, I think it's fair to say, for the nation. Do you fear the way that the president is projecting and calling this situation with this election that he won't allow to end? Do you fear that this could hurt the country long term?
Well, certainly, you know, again, we are a democracy. So we are the most powerful country in the world on the face of the earth. And we wear a badge on our democracy. We say how that the people have the right to vote and choose their leaders. And if you're sitting around with baseless claims, no evidence, and you have your own party, people that's in your party who are stating that, like Georgia, let's say Georgia, the Secretary of State of Georgia was attacked because he wanted to do what was right. Now, that's wrong. And then the governor, when the governor didn't go along with whatever, they wanted to do the same thing to him. They wanted to demonize him. This is not what this country is all about. This country is about the voice of the people. And certainly when we look and project out a certain look to the whole world, and we talk about democracy and we put our pride on democracy, then, you know, it can hurt. And not only that, it can also affect when we make this transition, because on January the 20th, there's going to be a new president sworn in. Then if he's not brief and his administration is not making this transition the way it's supposed to be, it can cause long-term damage. You know, back in 2000, when they had the dispute with Gore and Bush, we know that that next year we had 9/11. So our enemies are not sleeping. They don't care anything about the rhetoric or the false claims. What they're trying to do is to take this country down. So yes, I believe that it is damaging, and it can be more damaging. But I hope and pray, as a minister of God, that we will begin to move forward, and this transition will go forth with the pride of this country, and whatever that was dirty, that it will be clean, and we can move forward as a nation.
And obviously the president has no feeling apparently to concede, and by not bringing together the country, not having unity for what would almost be the first time since he's been president, or very rarely has he had a moment of unity, is there really worry that that could cause violence among his supporters?
Well, everything is possible, because, you know, his supporters are very, should I say, emotional about this whole election. They're very committed to his presidency and to his views and his platform. So anything is possible. Just here in the state of Michigan, you know that they arrest, I think, of four or six individuals who were trying to, or plotting allegedly, to take and kidnap our Democratic governor. And the scheme was uncovered and they were arrested. We have people who are going to the Capitol in Lansing, and they're walking around with automatic weapons at full view and exposing them. And what are you doing that for? It's intimidation. So we don't know where it's going to go from here, but it's good that we continue to pray. And I believe that prayer and faith in God will help us get through what we need to get through. Yes, I am concerned about that there could be a racial or a breakout of violence.
More of my in-depth interview with Bishop Jackson, including thoughts on a potential Trump run in 2024, his take on the new administration, and how to assure African Americans about the COVID vaccine, coming up. Before I move on, I just want to ask one more question in terms of, I guess, the future of the country, in terms of the future for the president, President Trump. There have been rumors he could immediately pivot to a 2024 run, even announcing it at the same time that Biden is having his inauguration. Just the fact that he could be, you know, constantly tweeting or having these counter-programming rallies against whatever is happening at the White House, do you think that this is something that would just damage the Biden administration, or at least try to, like, gnaw at it?
Well, you know, the 2024 run is, what, it's 4 years away. I believe that what we must focus in, and I really believe that President-elect Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris have really focused in on the task ahead of them. You have people now that have not gotten a stimulus check, unemployment has run out, businesses are failing, people are hurting, you have thousands of people waiting in line just to get food. We need to look at those things. I really believe that we have put too much emphasis on one individual, one administration. We need to get together as a country and heal. And I really believe that when we look at that, instead of talking about what's going to happen in 2024, I think right now that's ridiculous. I believe that there's a lot of healing that needs to be done. And I applaud President-elect Biden by choosing his cabinet, choosing the administration, and moving forward for this transition. Because as you know, we're only 40-something days away before he takes office.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you about that. I mean, I could ask you now, has there been enough diversity from the cabinet nominees thus far? And also, are there names that you have on a wish list?
Well, I believe that, you know, he's doing a good job. I mean, he has people of color, and executive places. He's looking even to take and expand even more, because he's just starting to choose those that's going to represent different agencies. I was listening today that there was on the news that there are many of the civil rights individuals, community, heading in civil rights community, like NAACP and others, that want to have a meeting with him to make sure that our agenda is being represented when it comes to the needs of our community. So I believe right now he's doing a good job. The people that I have seen that he has picked, I believe that they're very professional and they're good at what they do. And that's what we need right now. We need a administration that reflects this country. This country is not all white. This country is not all black. This country is not all brown. This country is not all yellow. This country is a multiracial, multi group of people that comes from all walks of life. And that's what the administration must be looking like.
And I wanted to, you know, delve a little deeper. What do you anticipate for blacks and browns in a Biden administration?
I do. I really believe that, first of all, President-elect Biden, he took and made a wise choice. When he chose Senator Harris to be his vice president, I believe that you're dealing with two different groups that's been disenfranchised down through the years, and that's women in general and also a woman of color, a multiracial woman of color, and a smart running mate. I believe that he started off with making a decision to get a woman of color to run with him for the presidency. And so, you know, we could see that there's a lot of work that's going to be done. And I would say that, yes, African Americans, we have been disenfranchised for so long. And we're saying now that we help make this happen for you. We're looking for strong representation. We're looking for our community being addressed, not just promises. Now, I've been pastoring over 30-something years, and I have seen presidents come in and out of the churches, because when they want to get a message, they want to come to the African-American church. You look at Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King was a Baptist minister. He's a Baptist minister. They rally and they gathered around the pews, behind the pulpit. The speaker spoke. So the church always been a powerful force when it comes to getting our message out and gathering together and binding together when it comes to making sure that we go to demand our part of the piece of the pie. So what I'm looking at now, I'm looking at a situation where African Americans have been so heavily impacted from the last 4 years, that they really, like, now that the table was spread, I want to make sure that we get our portion. So I believe that he's on the right track. And I believe that as we move forward, that there's going to be some things that are going to be taken and considered, and not just the promises, because like I said, I've had pastors and no pastors, and even myself, have these politicians in our pulpits and endorse them, but we have not been in a place of power. And that's what I look at Biden doing now, that he's putting people as power players and not just someone who just has a job that's going to, you know, not make decisions. So we just hope and pray that as we move forward with this administration, time will tell, but I really believe that he's got the message and he's going to do what he can to help the community.
Let's talk a little about the COVID situation, Pastor. It has been a difficult year, especially for minorities. It has been very, very tough in a lot of metropolises, a lot of minorities throughout the country. And unfortunately, this is going to get worse now before it gets better, even though there is, certainly a silver lining with the with vaccines and good data with that. But we have several months now with the winter that's upon us. First off, is there concern with the vaccine about to get distributed in the coming months that many, many minorities will be afraid to take it? And also, are they being overlooked?
Well, I'll put it this way. We know that the other day that they just decided to vote for getting the vaccine out to the what I feel the most two vulnerable groups, and that is our first line workers, our doctors, our those who are right there in the middle of the storm, and I applaud that. And also those who are in assisting living, get them positioned so they can be immune. That's good. But I pray that the African American people of color will be the next group that will be vaccinated or have an opportunity to be vaccinated, because as you said, that it has hit the community, the African-American community, the brown community. A major impact, negative impact, has been on African-Americans. African-Americans are dying more so at a stronger and rate that Caucasians are. And so a lot of that is because of healthcare. A lot of that is because of underlying health situations, diabetes, heart condition, high blood pressure, asthma, and so forth. But so on, because the healthcare is not there in many of the African Americans community. And what I wanted to say with that is that I really believe that if we look at the next rollout, that African Americans will be a part of that, the benefit from that. But that's good. Let's just say that they do put African-American people of color on the next rollout. The next challenge they're going to have is a challenge of getting African-Americans to believe that they're not being guinea pigs. Tuskegee. Let's take Tuskegee for an example. 1932, I think it was. In 1932, they had this trial and they brought in 600 African-Americans, 399 had syphilis, and 201 didn't have syphilis. And they promised these African-Americans that they would give them free health care, they would give them a burial, they would give them, it was some other benefits. I don't have it all in front of my mind, but there was a lot of benefits they gave them to participate in this in this study. And this was the government that did this. But you know, they didn't tell them, the ones that had the syphilis, they didn't tell them that they had syphilis. They didn't tell them that they were treating them for this disease. Matter of fact, they encouraged them not to even seek any other help. Well, down through the years, from it's supposed to only been a short program, it ended up going from 1932 to 1942. And many of these men suffered and they died, and the government watched them die. And so we always look at that as being not just this case, but as us being the guinea pigs. It wasn't until that it was exposed in 1942. And then in 1997, President Bill Clinton at that time apologized for what the government had done to these black individuals. So you got to get them to believe and trust this vaccine first. And I believe that that's going to come through grassroots efforts.
Does it also help the fact that you've got a president coming in who has large support from the black and the brown community as opposed to the current president? Does that must make a big difference.
Well, it'll make some difference. I believe I was looking yesterday at former President Obama. He said that he believes in Dr. Fauci. He's been knowing him for a while, and he knows that he is a person of good character. And he says that Dr. Fauci says that this vaccine is absolutely safe, then he's going to take it. It's going to take leaders like that as a former president. And also it's going to take your community activists. It's going to take the faith-based community who have that ground, grassroots contact with the individuals to make sure that, you know, they get the voice out to the community so they can feel comfortable with it. And I really believe that there's going to be a lot of education that's going to go ago before people were really feeling in their minds that they were going to take the virus, the vaccine shot for the virus. Now, I've been hearing a lot of African-Americans say they're not going to take it because they don't want to feel like guinea pigs. And again, it's going to take education and it's going to take a community effort. And that's your faith-based, your community activists. And it's going to take a national, should I say, campaign to make people be, you know, soften up and be comfortable with it.
I know, speaking of, you mentioned President Obama, they said that three former presidents are willing to publicly take the vaccine and to show it's safe. Again, support from the Black community, obviously the first Black president.
Well, definitely that would help. That would help. Again, it's going to take, that would be a big plus, but it's going to take going down to the grassroots. People, especially in the African American community, they believe in their leadership, their spiritual leadership. And I believe that once the pastor and the pastors in their pulpits be able to express to the people their certainty of it being a safe vaccine to take, that is going to lift people up even higher. But what you're saying about the three former presidents, yes, taking a vaccine publicly, that definitely would be a good plus to get people to feel more comfortable in taking it themselves.
Well, 2020 was not just about a pandemic. It was also about racial injustice. Of course, the George Floyd killing that we saw, that brutal video by Minneapolis police. Is police reform a national issue, or should that just be the states handling overhauling precincts?
Well, I think it should be in conjunction with the national and the individual states. I think they should have the power also to evaluate what they have in their state or in their city to see how to take and adjust according to their community. That George Floyd situation was evident that was intentional, that he was murdered. The restraint that they put on George was way beyond what the situation had placed there. They could have let him up. You had about, four police officers, one on his neck, handcuffed, hands behind his back. That was an execution. Everybody can see that clearly. And when police officers who are out there like that should be held accountable. And I'm glad to see that, but I'm hoping and praying under the President Biden's, elects Biden's administration, that we will address that issue and more and continue to move forward according to what's already been started. You had thousands of people in the streets all over this country. I've never seen anything like that in my entire life. But it's showing that Black and white, yellow, female, male, young children with marching for the rights of a group of people. And that is very important, that the government, the next administration, and those who are over in the state level will work together to make sure that we weed out the bad cops. Nobody want to defund the police. That's ridiculous. You defund the police, who are you going to call? If somebody's knocking on your door or trying to kick your door in, who are you going to call? So that's really ridiculous, and I don't know why people even come up with that type of statement, because we want in our community, we want police officers, but we do want people that understand the community, and that's what I hope that we do and that we see with the new administration on a national level and also on a statewide level.
You said that you believe overall the majority of police. Is it systemic racism? You've heard that term throughout, certainly this last year and beyond. Do you feel that that's the case?
Yes. I mean, it's no question about it. I've been stopped by for traffic, stopped by police officers that appeared to be so, and I was stopped by some were very nice. And yes, it's there. This country within itself, as a former President Obama said, that, you know, we're just not going to get rid of racism overnight. We're going to have to continue to work on it. We want to continue to speak about it. And our voices must be heard. And, you know, this marching that we just saw this past summer, I believe that we got to continue to let our voices be heard in a civil manner and our voices be heard when it comes to the new administration, that we need to fix this because it's broke. You look at the population that's behind bars, incarcerated. You know, people are going to jail. They get a felony on their records. And what happened is they try to get out and get a job. Now they're in the system. Then the PO officer and the person that put restraints on them, and I understand people must be monitored. But in the same sense, when you look at, you try to go get a job, say you got your degree, and we have an individual here. He's a floor director, and he's also an accountant for the Impact Television Network. Well, he has superb talent, and he's really benefiting his community and benefiting this network. But when he will try to get a job before he came here, he qualified well. But when they found out that he had a felony on his record, they fired him. So how can a person of color move forward? And you're always putting roadblocks there. How can they move forward when you have prisons that are run by private firms for profit, profit? So we really need to look at all of these different components, because there's a lot of them out there, and to straighten them out to the best of our ability, and our voice continue to move in a manner of what's being right and rightfully done for the African-American community.
Well, Bishop Wayne T. Jackson, he is the founder of the Impact Network. I have to thank you for giving me all this time today. It has been a pleasure.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate it. And God bless you, and may you have a wonderful, prosperous holiday New Year.
Thank you. Same to you. If you enjoyed this interview, by joining my Patreon Here Now the News page, you'll have access to additional premium content from the conversation. Supporting the podcast means helping it gain traction with more listeners. So thank you for that. Another important way to help it find a larger audience, sharing this or other episodes. Additionally, Apple device users, yes, I'm talking to you, please leave a 5-star rating and review. If you have any questions, I'd love to hear from you. I may even read a comment in an upcoming episode. I'm on Twitter at Jerry Barmash. You can email me, hearnowthenewsjb@gmail.com. Also find me on the Hear Now the News Facebook page, where I hold occasional live streams. What's next? I'm working on scheduling a few new episodes, but got delayed in the middle of the holidays, so it'll be a bit of a surprise when the new episode is available Monday, January 11th. Here's to a happy, healthy, and prosperous 2021. Thanks for listening to Hear Now the News. I'm Jerry Barmash.